Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. The times of interviews are back, and I'm so honored to be with Bill Ottman, the founder of Minds. I remember the first time I heard about Minds. I remember the first day it was starting, and it's so nostalgic to me to talk again, to think again about these times where the internet was free, but some people had the foresight of seeing we're going to need alternative platforms because it's not going to stay that way forever. And Minds has been since then a leading innovator in everything that people talk about. People talk about arimating to the blockchain. People talk about having a system that incentivizes creators. People talk about having a super chat system basically colliding with the social world. But Minds has done it all, and they've done it amazingly. So I'm amazed that we can have the insight from the man himself. Bill Ottman is with us tonight. How are you doing, Bill?
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to finally chat. We were just saying before the show that we've like known each other for so many years, but you know, through videos, not from talking in person. So I'm psyched.
Yeah, I actually had to check with Bill that we hadn't spoke before because he's been so present on the social media and on other videos that I had the impression I knew him so much that I must have talked to him before, but I never did. So Minds, one of the super exciting thing I want to talk about, the integration to Noster. People are extremely excited around Noster, this decentralized system, which is amazing to me because when you look at what Noster is, it is what Usenet was. It is a system of decentralized hosting of speech. And it's amazing that the internet has passed through an era of centralization and censorship, and we are returning to the good old values. You could totally take Usenet and make it into today's Noster. It wouldn't be that much of a dramatic shift. It's amazing to me that the good old values are taking over, and Minds is converting to be a Noster client to some extent.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited about Noster. For anyone who doesn't know, Noster is an open source decentralized relay protocol for social media, for censorship resistant social media. It stands for notes and other stuff transmitted by relay. So it's kind of this funny acronym. And it was created anonymously. There is no company behind it, which is very crucial towards its survival, similar to Bitcoin. You know, the fact that it's an anonymous founder and there's no one to go after legally is very important with these decentralized systems. So yeah, Noster basically consists of clients and relays, and then users. Essentially, you own your identity, so you have a cryptographic key pair associated with yourself. You and only you have that sovereign private key, which is basically like your password. And then your public key is where people can send you messages, it's where people can follow you, and you take that, you can take that in between clients. So your followers, your content, your identity is yours. And it's not something that's locked in to the centralized platform. So that is the big paradigm shift that it brings. And, you know, there's other similar protocols that are doing similar things, but Noster has really taken off recently. You know, we basically created a delegation protocol with Noster so that, you know, which basically enables, you know, large kind of traditional social networks to become decentralized. In a sense. And it's really exciting. Yeah. Like Snowden joined the other day. The whole Bitcoin community is really taking it up. And, you know, I'm sorry, like if you get Snowden's endorsement, it, you know, that's not an easy thing to get.
Yes. And we've learned from the survival of things on the internet. When I look at the internet and what didn't survive and what survived, I think of MySpace. What survived, I think of torrenting technology. I think of Bitcoin. These things have shown resilience to the point where we can say they can survive a decade on the internet. They can survive 2-3 decades on the internet. And it's amazing that in your work, you are integrating this proof of existence, proof of capacity to be resilient to the world. And as you said, just the founder of a software, I was thinking about programming some decentralized software in my name, you know, something that would allow people to be more free. But then I thought, well, if someone commits a crime with my decentralized software, eventually the feds are going to get to me. And so basically it has become impossible to be a public personality, to have your name attached to a software that is decentralized, because the legal system has adjusted to persecute the very programmer of the software, even if he is not involved in the crimes. And so it's very important that we have this base technology that forms a kind of infrastructure that is untraceable and that everyone can agree to use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you were familiar with the saga that took place with Tornado Cash on Ethereum.
So slightly. There's
a very interesting story.
But take us through it.
Well, and I'm not an expert on all the details, but essentially Tornado Cash was a way to anonymize your Ethereum so that so that the whole kind of trail of the transactional history of it, you know, could be kept private, because that's one of the sort of trade-offs with some public blockchains, is that all the transactions are public and, you know, basically surveillanceable. And so Tornado Cash was a tool where you could put your Ether into it and then it would come out on the other side on a private wallet. And it was an amazing open source tool, which obviously people should have the right to do that. But what happened is, because, you know, it was being used for certain nefarious purposes, as any open source decentralized technology can,
as Facebook,
you know, be used for,
as Twitter,
Facebook, yes, right. And so they arrested the founder. They went after him and they took down the whole project. And it's totally brutal, because, you know, they were totally good faith operation, from, you know, what I can tell. And, you know, that's the risk that you take when you get involved with these types of distributed systems. So, you know, yeah, like as you were saying, you know, if you're planning on doing this, you definitely want to consider launching anonymously.
Which is what Satoshi Nakamoto did. And we see the result, a complete reversal, basically a revolution of the financial system that has not even delivered its most beautiful fruits yet. Amazing. Now, there's lots of misconception around the rules on mines, because let me tell you how my community sees mines. And I was actually shocked in my research today. We tend to see mines as still an anti-hate speech website where we could be censored for our genuine beliefs that we have that are political in nature. But I read about it today. You don't have a hate speech rule. And we're receiving a lot of super chats. Some random bloke was asking, is Mines a free speech absolutist platform similar to Gab?
Oh, for sure. I mean, as far as we can push it within the First Amendment, we're a U.S. company. So, you know, within U.S. law, absolutely. And, you know, beyond that, I'm curious where people get that perception. I think that maybe where it comes from is that we have actually done, you know, the paper censorship effect that I shared with you that we wrote. We actually did a whole academic paper with multiple PhDs, myself, Daryl Davis. So essentially, look, we're not pro hate speech. I mean, no one likes hate speech. Obviously, the definition of hate speech varies, and what's hate speech to some is not hate speech to other people. And certainly, way too much content is called hate speech that isn't hate speech. But I think that we can all agree that we want like a generally less hateful world. But anyway, regardless of that, the point, what our research showed, we brought together all the research around censorship and proved that censorship causes increased radicalization and even potentially violence. So we are the furthest from wanting to censor anybody, and hate speech, lawful hate speech, absolutely can exist on mine. Because if you deplatform hateful people, then they just go and become more radicalized. The only way to actually change someone's mind is to communicate with them. So, you know, I understand there's a lot of ambiguity in terms of, yes, some people are falsely claimed to be hateful who are not hateful. However, there are people who are serious, malicious trolls. And, but again, even them, we want them to have a voice so that they can engage in civil dialogue, because that is the only way that their minds can change. So yeah, I mean, that is a myth. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So some random blog, the super chatter, I will tell you now that I've read through the TOS, what they have is they have these rules to make sure that Minds is a comfortable place, but it has nothing to do with hate speech. It's like spam, that kind of thing, abuse of the platform. But I'll tell you where the misconception lied in my mind, because you have a jury system. When I heard about this jury system, I was tempted to, I was enthusiastic about it. But at the same time, I was extremely scared, human beings deciding what we should say, what we should not say. But that's not what the jury system turns out to be. The job of your jury system is to make sure that the strict rules that you have enabled, which are fully First Amendment compatible, get followed, and that spam really is spam, and that abuse really is abuse, but that it doesn't end up being a political tool of oppression.
Right. And yeah, there's definitely misconception about the jury functionality. So the way that it currently operates is only for the appeals process. So say your channel so we have a three strike policy for an NSFW flag on your channel. So to use as an example, so when you create a post on Minds, you have the ability to tag it as NSFW. So to use an extreme example, say you are into pornography and you sign up and you just start posting tons of porn, and then it gets reported and you get two strikes and you still refuse to label it when you upload it as NSFW. In that case, we will flag the entire channel as NSFW, because what happens if you don't self-label, then your pornography gets pushed into new user recommendations and stuff like that. So we need a way to, you know, have people need to label in good faith. So the way our system works is if you feel you were falsely flagged as NSFW, then you can appeal that to a jury, which is 12 randomized active users who are not connected to each other. And they can vote on the appeal. And, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me, but like we have been overturned before, which is good. The reason we built the jury was to keep ourselves in check. So we wanted, because we understand that centralized companies can make mistakes. And so we wanted the community to be able to keep us in check. Now, it's not a perfect system. And like, so it's funny because people don't actually fully know what they want. In one end, people want more of a community moderated thing, because that's more like people powered. And you know, it doesn't have centralized corporate interests making all the decisions. However, your skepticism, I think, was that mobs could potentially take over and that would be very scary. So this is why we haven't rolled the jury out to the initial decision layer. We've only left it in appeals, because we need to make sure that mobs cannot take over, because that would have so many different consequences. So it is our goal ultimately to decentralize the moderation system on Minds, and you know, basically create a decentralized reputation graph of users based on, you know, history and whatnot, and try to decentralize trust and reputation is a very difficult project in itself, which is sort of a prereq to making the jury system work. But the last thing I'll say about it is I will give credit to the community notes feature on Twitter, which I think is doing a pretty good job at creating a decentralized, community-centric, like fact-checking system, way better than the old Twitter fact-checking system. Like you actually, you know, even like some of Elon's stuff will get fact-checked, and yeah, you know, which is good. And it seems like there's somewhat of a reasonable access for, you know, different opinions to get involved there. So, yeah.
with these fact check, the big problem is estimating quality independent of bias, because you're going to have abusers of this fact check system. The more it's decentralized, the more crowds will be able to abuse it in a way that you can't undo. You don't want trolls to be able to put something there just for the purpose of trolling. So all of this is extremely hard to resolve in decentralized mode. Now, on the decentralization of minds, I'm not sure I understand where you're at with the Noster thing. Is it the case that minds doesn't exist as a central entity anymore? Is it the case that all posts on minds are in Noster servers at this point?
So we're hybrid. If you go to your settings, you can generate your Noster private key, download it. You have access to that. We don't have access to it. And it is actually, Noster is going through some growing pains, and there's some kind of architectural quirks getting ironed out. But, you know, basically, all posts on Minds are writing to Noster. So we also have our servers, which is basically running in parallel to the Noster infrastructure. So, but ultimately what we want is for users to have portability and sovereignty over their assets. So you can currently create your Noster key and then actually and post on Minds for a while and then go to another client and use that key and your stuff will be there. So, you know, that's the main point, is that we don't want you to have to trust us, and we want you to have control over your digital stuff.
Very interesting. Some random bloke has sent a super chat. He says, has the ADL or SPLC gone after minds.com yet? Seems like they are going all out against Andrew Torba.
Oh yeah. You can find at least five different, I've spoken with Jonathan Greenblatt once. And you know, he was not particularly reasonable at all in the conversation. They've included us in like at least five articles, you know, usually coupling us in with like Gab, BitChute, Telegram, most of those others. And, you know, the ADL, also Media Matters has gone after I went on Tucker a few years ago, Media Matters came after us really hard. You know, we're definitely in that group. I would say that we're different from Gab and Rumble and Getter and Parler in the sense that we are less political in nature. So like we're not like I feel, and this is, I totally respect their right to do this, but from the top down, they're very sort of conservative leaning.
Christians.
And that's fine. Like I have, you know. We at Minds, we all have our own political affiliations. You know, I think most people at Minds are pro like liberty, but we're not necessarily like conservative. So, you know, I think that makes us a little bit more accessible to people on the left. Like we actually have a lot of like anti-war kind of, you know, classical liberal crowds. Like when the whole Snowden thing blew up back, you know, in 2016 or so. You know, we got a ton of kind of that type. Because Snowden, I would consider him like slightly progressive, but like very free speech and pro-privacy. We try to just be more balanced in that sense. And also, you know, I'm glad you're streaming on Odyssey, because Odyssey is open source, decentralized. You know, they actually uphold actual, you know, internet freedom values. Gab, to a degree, does as well. I think they are also open source. But they are very against any kinds of like pornography, I'm pretty sure, which is protected speech in the first, you know, under the First Amendment. So that's kind of where they stray from free speech. I, again, respect their right to kind of moderate how they want to. But Parler, Getter, Rumble, Truth are all proprietary, closed source, surveillance centric. So while they may be more pro free speech than much big tech, they don't share their software. So they're not transparent. Most likely, actually, I know for a fact that Rumble uses Google Analytics. Most of these sites are filled with all kinds of nasty big tech spyware. And, you know, they're doing this because it saves them time. But for us, we have decided to, you know, take the long road and do everything with literally none of that crap is in our code. So, you know, and, it's important for people to understand this vision.
I don't think they will last. I don't think they will last because they've attracted a certain type of super specific crowd at a time, a kind of MAGA boomer crowd. But on the long run, they're just not technologically superior the way you kept minds, the way Gab has been kept to a certain extent. And transparency, you're talking a lot about transparency, and ultimately transparency is not so important, but it's more the self-effect on the programmer and on the team that's important. Because when you program something and you know it's going to be exposed and transparent, you don't want to mess with it. And I think this is what Twitter is missing at this point. Because I'd like to have little labels added to the tweet that tell me why this tweet was shadow banned, why this account was banned. We get none of this, unfortunately. And with transparency, people feel obliged to a greater duty than when they know they can act in the dark.
100%. And it's been really fascinating listening to Elon's talking points around open source and transparency. He has actually, just in the last few weeks, he reiterated that they are going to be open sourcing their recommendation algorithm. You know, he said that they were going to do it like last week. They still haven't done it. He's also said that Twitter's code is an absolute mess. And so I think that what's going, and early on, even before the acquisition, he was saying, we're open source the whole thing. And that just got me super excited. I was like, oh my God, finally a big tech company is going to open source their code and kind of join the conversation. And so we'll see if he actually open sources the code. It would be a huge letdown to me if he doesn't. It's anyone listening, like, help us hold Elon accountable to actually do this. It's very important that Twitter releases their source code because that shows the whole. Go ahead.
I was saying hashtag open the code, Elon.
Yeah, open the code, Elon. I mean, because and this is why, you know, most people might be like, I'm never going to look at the code. I don't care. But here's why it matters. The whole version history of all of the algorithmic manipulation exists in the source code. All of the skeletons in the closet exist in the source code. So the Twitter files have been amazing. I'm so glad that they've been doing that. But there's a whole other like Twitter files about the actual source code. And when the open source programmers of the world can just pounce on that code and audit it, that will be, you know, kids in a candy store for finding corruption. So that really needs to happen. And I think that I think they have security concerns as well because it was so poorly built that if they open source it, then they're just going to get attacked. And, but again, that is a sad excuse that so many companies use for not open sourcing their code. They'll just say, oh, you know, it's security through obscurity is a myth. And, you know, the companies that try to push that are, you know, full of it, in my opinion. So I do think that they're capable of open sourcing it all, but they're probably a little bit scared.
Absolutely. The cancel culture is in full swing. We are just learning that Lauren Sutton, her parents have been banned from Airbnb because they are the parent of Lauren Sutton. One way in which Minds avoids this is by decentralizing the payment system. You've been running amazing experiments and trailblazing with the Minds token a long time ago already, and now with Super Minds. Can you take us through what is... sorry, people are hearing an echo of me. Sorry. People are taking us through... can you take us through... Sorry, I was fixing here an audio bug. Can you take us through the means by which Minds is creating a payment system?
Yeah, so we've supported Bitcoin wallets since like 2012, actually. It didn't get nearly enough recognition, but we've loved Bitcoin since the beginning. So, you know, that's there, so you can tip other creators of Bitcoin. And then we introduced Ethereum as well. So, and also a token on Ethereum, which can be earned and, you know, shared through the community. The tokens that you earn can also be used to boost your content. Tokens are worth views. So when you earn that, you can basically earn reach, which I think is so essential because the algorithms are strangling everybody on other networks. So we wanted to create a tool for people to actually earn the ability to be heard. You can also pay to boost, but you know, that earn ability is super key. But I'm glad we did. And then we also have a, you know, cash system through Stripe. You know, we'll see how long that lasts. But you know, it was cool doing a super mine with you today. I don't know if there's any way that we can show that interaction.
Absolutely. But I'm just realizing that Zoom is about to cut us in 7 minutes. I want to get to the super mines. We'll get there, but it seems I have to rebuy my plan of Zoom. I'm sorry. But while I go get my credit card to do so, I wanted to ask about the algorithm choice, because the next step after open source is the question of algorithmic choice and control your own algorithm. And this is also a point on which, as far as I know, Minds is the only platform that has innovated in that domain, right?
Yeah, we built a whole tool called Build Your Algorithm, and you can essentially move these sliders depending on how much controversial content you want, how much political content you want, how much, you know, X, Y, and Z. And that is sort of helping curate the recommendations that you receive. Also, you know, from a base level, we have always said that a chronological feed by default is very essential, because, you know, otherwise you start to see what's happening on Instagram and Twitter. And like, you know, even at Elon knows that what happens is the networks start getting addicted to the For You feed, because the For You feed, here's the thing, algorithms are not bad. Algorithms are great as a choice. You know, you may want to see more trending content. You may want to see, you know, the suggestions from the machine learning. That's fine. But the default feed should be chronological, because that is the pure connection between creators and fans, or just between people, so that when, you know, you post, you have an uncensored access to those people. But when the default feed changes, that is when the whole social contract of social media becomes distorted. So, you know, algorithms are great. I mean, algorithms are math. To be anti-algorithm is to be anti-math. So it's not like, it doesn't make sense to just be against them, but it's all the default settings are the key. In, you know, end-to-end encryption by default, chronological feeds by default, you know, anti-surveillance by default. If people want to opt in to different tracking to improve their recommendations, that's great. I mean, I would even do that under certain circumstances. The thing is that, you know, look at the YouTube and, you know, Instagram, and the recommendations are like, sometimes very good. Like, you'll see videos that are you really want to watch, because it's understanding your view history, it's understanding what you're engaging with, and it's learning about you. And that's not necessarily a positive or negative thing, depending on, you know, what they're doing with the data. You should have the ability to wipe that data anytime you want, which you can't typically on big tech sites. But so it's more nuanced. It's not like pro or anti. There's sort of this area in between.
Yeah, it's there's been such an overlap between the goodness of algorithm, which led companies to be super successful. When you think about what makes Google Google, why is Google a giant? It's just because they were giving better answers than anyone else. But amazingly, when they win, eventually there's a kind of force that comes in and that tries to make these results less relevant. And we are at the point today in 2023 where Google is not the place to go if you want certain things. You know they're not going to give it to you. And so how do you balance, when you create an algorithm like this, how do you balance considerations around what people want and what you want them to get? Do you even have considerations for what you want people to be exposed to? Or do you go by customer demand, basically, by behavior of humans? What are you trying to maximize?
Well, the default settings just need to be in kind of user's control. And so again, algorithms work, and the reason that you see the default settings on all of them to be for you is because they know it's a fact that you're going to engage with more content through the For You feed than through chronological. Just the data shows that, just over the top. They think they know what you want to see more than you do. But that doesn't change the principle that you should have the choice. And by default, you should not be pushed into these algorithms. So, for us, like, obviously, we want people to be as engaged and possible as engaged as possible, because that helps with our growth, but not at the cost of, their digital rights.
Oops,
I
sorry.
just lost your audio.
I was muted for a while. I'm still working on getting this Zoom call maintained.
A
Unfortunately,
countdown, 2 minutes. Will we make it?
if we don't recover, we'll find a different way to connect, I guess. Someone had sent a super chat. He said, "Bill Hutman, what is the source of money for Minds? How will Minds preserve free discussion, even offensive words and unpopular topics, and evade attacks from censorious governments? What is your opinion of the Monero cryptocurrency?"
Okay, so a couple questions there. So in terms of Mind sort of source of funds, are, first we did a friends and family round. Like, I invested, some friends and family we brought in. This was way back in like 2011, 2012. In 2017, we did an equity crowdfunding round through WeFunder. So if you go to WeFunder.com/Mind, you can actually see, and actually thousands of members of the Mind community invested, and now they actually have stock. Which I think is a unique thing we've done. After that, we did Series A with Medici Ventures, which is a blockchain focused investment group, very pro freedom, very pro liberty, pro decentralization. And then we did another round with a group called Futo out of Austin, futo.org, FUTO.org, who's founded by Aaron Wolf, who is a amazing figure, who formerly, sold a couple companies to Yahoo. He was actually an early investor in WhatsApp before they got bought by Facebook, and was a developer there. And he was so disillusioned by that experience that he, is now on a rampage against Silicon Valley. And he's investing in all kinds of different decentralized protocol. You can see on futo.org, but we are very fortunate to have investors that care about freedom. I would never bring in an investor that doesn't care about freedom, because that would waste, my life's work at this point, and would just be totally counterproductive. There's no reason for that. I mean, because we can always go to the crowd again. I think the community, we may open up future crowdfunding opportunities. And I think that, so the other question was Monero. Monero is great. I mean, I'm not a maximalist in terms of, I'm very much like pro innovation, and I love Bitcoin. I am a Bitcoiner. Monero is amazing too. Zcash is really cool. I love Ethereum. I love good faith projects in this world, and I'm not like, I don't know. The Bitcoin maxis are, I respect their right to exist, but that's not my cup of tea.
All right. Amazingly, I was able to save the Zoom call at 3 seconds left. I have clicked on place order. I hope that
That's
they
kind of
didn't
cool that
charge
they do it in
it.
the flow. Like, they literally they get you to put your credit card in the flow. That's very clever.
Absolutely. Something to learn for sales, I guess. At the sales level.
Yeah, that's
The
Super
Supermind,
Mind, you were
talking
talking
about it.
about it.
I was
I was
stunned
stunned
today
today
because
because
I heard about, of course, the idea of a Supermind. It's like a super chat on Minds. It's you trigger a creator and you say, "I'm willing to pay $10 to get an answer to that question." And what I don't realize is a Superman can make you cry. Bill Ottman made me cry today when he sent me his $10 Supermind, and he asked how has social media censorship impacted your psyche as a creator. I will read my response to it, but Bill, have you known creators and how hard it is, how anxious you are when you're a creator subjected to censorship?
I mean, I got the shivers reading your response because it is really emotional, kind of what everybody is going through, and to be kind of living in this state of fear is just not healthy, and it's really scary for people who are who love being an independent creator. I mean, becoming an independent, whether you're a creator, whatever you're doing to, you know, for your livelihood, to be independent is freedom. So to have that risk of having that all stripped away from you just because of, you know, some ideologue at some company, that is terrifying. So that's why it's so important to diversify your where you have followers and your whole infrastructure for yourself. So yeah, I mean, Supermind is, we're really excited about it because it's similar to Super Chat. You can get answers. The main difference, why I actually think it's better than Super Chat. You guys should all, send more Super Chats to the show, or Super Minds. I mean, but the difference is that, so these are posts, public posts on the site, and you can send one, and for $100, $1,000, $10, whatever you want, or token, and you don't pay unless you get a response. So the difference with Super Chat is that it's more like a donation and maybe you'll get a response. With Supermind, it expires after 7 days and you get your money back if you don't get a response. And those posts are public on Mind. So it's kind of like a cool way to engage with creators that you really like. And yeah, I mean, you know, we, like today, we created some really cool content together and I feel really excited about that.
Absolutely. And I like that it stays as a record because I answer a super chat here on the show. Maybe it's about something else than the thumbnail and people lose it. People don't know what my answer to that super chat was. Whereas this remains a URL on the internet available for everyone to consult. Now people are informing me that here is my echo problem. It is now fixed so I can read my answer to the question of Bill Ottman, how has social media censorship impacted your psyche as a creator? I said, oh, wow, I almost have tears to my eyes just thinking about it. Censorship has been a constant point of pressure, one that remained omnipresent in my mind for years, a little voice inside warning of a danger that is always there but shouldn't exist. Censorship is the word I woke up to every morning for years as I stepped up from bed, refreshing my YouTube channel to check if I still had a job. There is no word to describe the torture that censorship imposes on a creator's mind. It is not just about being careful about what you say and how you say it. It is an active force that compels you to become paranoid, to censor your own audience, your guest, to read every super chat in your mind before you read them aloud. It's a force that is contrary to the internet, which is meant to connect people to each other. Censorship disconnected me from everything. Friends, audiences, and other creators. It disconnected me from myself, as I had to start ignoring IDs simply because they were deemed not monetizable by someone else. As the web slowly recovers from the censorship era, I feel like a victim of cognitive abuse who is suddenly seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel where perhaps peace can be achieved. I often describe what I feel about censorship as PTSD, because as someone who's worked in neuropsychiatry, I know what PTSD is when people come back from war, and I can see that I have pretty much the same symptoms when I think about what has been done to our YouTube channels, to our web presence, and the state of terrorism, almost mind terrorism, that exists on the internet right now.
Yeah, and the chilling effect is a disaster. It's and it goes so much deeper than you think, you know, and because, you know, we here and probably most people listening have at least to a certain degree sort of found the bravery to speak out to a degree. But so, I mean, the vast majority of humanity is stuck and they're not even aware. They're so deep into sort of the thought manipulation that they don't even know why they're saying what they're saying and why they're spreading the ideas that they're spreading. And but then there's a whole other group of people who are, and this is the most malicious group of people, are the people who believe in free speech very deeply, but are just, you know, not willing to step. Like, it's one thing to be totally brainwashed and not have seen the light, but to have seen freedom and know that it's there, and then like deliberately ignore it, that's dark.
Oh yeah. So many people out there have stayed silent in the era of censorship. They've done nothing. They just continued benefiting basically from the censorship of people that was happening around them. And eventually the system would come for them. Now we see a lot of leftists being banned on YouTube because they are, at this point, they are the most edgy YouTube creators. You know? At this point, they have failed at compressing themselves toward the left that where Suzanne Wojcicki wants them. Amazing. Amazing your work on
one Mines. More comment on that. Yes. One more comment on that, though. So Zuby, who you guys might be familiar with, he's a popular creator, very kind of pro-freedom. He made a really interesting post a couple months ago that really stuck with me. And he said something along, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, people message me all the time telling me that, you know, they support what I'm doing, but they don't feel like they can say, you know, anything publicly. And, you know, people, and he said that this, people think that this is going to make him feel good, but it actually makes him feel very upset because it's like people are confiding in him their fear and their unwillingness to, you know, protect themselves and their community. So, you know, and this is very common. You hear creators say all the time, oh, people message me privately, you know, too afraid to speak out, which, you know, is, I suppose, a step in the process for certain people who are starting to, you know, come to grips with their ideas. But, you know, if you find yourself messaging a creator, like telling them you support them, but then being too afraid to say it publicly, it's like, I don't know if that's a worthwhile message to send. I think you just need to figure something out for yourself before you send that message.
I may have had this a couple of times in my life. And yes, it's not encouraging at all. It's like, okay, you're not a fan if you are telling me that, like, oh, JF, I believe you on this, but I can't talk about it publicly. It's like, do you see the amount of sacrifice I had to do to be able to stand as a pillar to protect you so that you could speak and you don't speak? Mm-hmm. That is so insulting in many ways. Micronova has sent a super chat. He says, does Mind have a sort of crypto payment system like Odyssey as library tokens? The library tokens have come under attack by the US government. Censorship leftist attack money. It's so important to have a way to fund Minds. How can Minds be resilient against money attacks?
Yeah, I mean, we support multiple different cryptos. So we don't want any kind of like single vector. So Bitcoin, Ethereum, Mind token, you know, if there's many different cryptos to use. And so, yeah, we would never like put all our eggs in one basket.
Absolutely. I've been trying the feature because as a very early Mind subscriber, I mean, I was there the first days it was available. I had stacked thousands of Mind's token and there was the bull run and Mind's token went insane. So I was like, hey, I've been stacking this, which used to be worth $5, $10, and now it's worth thousands of dollars. So I tried those features. It's amazing how it's connected to blockchains and it's like swapped to ETH. It's all feasible. I was very amazed at this. And ultimately, this all paid my snowblower. Ultimately, Minds token that people have sent me on the platform have allowed me to blow snow this winter. I find this absolutely amazing.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's so little clarity in terms of crypto regulation. So I can't even, like, I stay out of anything having to do with price or any of that. I can't even talk about it. I don't personally like get, deal with that. But, people are going to do what people are going to do in a free decentralized system. That's kind of what comes with the territory. So we just focus on like the utility of the token. For use on mines, but like, that's sort of the beauty of decentralized, like, cause we, the point, the token system actually was originally a point system that was just totally centralized. And this was back in 2015. And then as Ethereum launched, everybody and, crypto started gaining some more steam. Everybody just said, migrate to Ethereum. So that we can have control over the tokens that we earn. And we were that was just an obvious move. Like, of course, if we want people to have censorship resistant rewards and, but yeah, it's very frustrating the lack of clarity and, everything that Library went, is going through
Oh yeah,
is just brutal. And,
everyone who's developing on the blockchain has this problem that they cannot even tell what can they do, what can't they do. It's very insulting from the government to be going piecemeal and attacking some companies here, like Odyssey got well, Library got targeted, and it's not clear yet if a separate company doing decentralized blockchain stuff would have the same troubles. A big lack of clarity. I agree with this. People were
Well, and
asking.
it's even more brutal that, Library Odyssey, one of the few projects that has like an amazing application. And like, because there's so much true scam in crypto, like it's literally 99% crap. But, they like a project with an actual product and like user, it just makes no sense. The whole thing is completely backwards.
Absolutely. I see there were different trends a couple of years ago when Dave Rubin went with the locals. And Dave Rubin went with locals with the idea the internet is headed towards small circle jerking, basically, where everyone has their little community and that's all that matters. Minds has never really went there. Minds has stayed with the classical Web 2.0 full experience of a whole mind community with followers, of course, but a global site. Do you think that it's the right way to go? Do you think that Dave Rubin, it was just a fad, this whole idea of creating locals, creating small communities?
So I think that so we do support memberships on Mines where, people you can set up different tiers in cash or tokens and people can subscribe to that tier and then you can offer them exclusive content through that tier, which, obviously we all know all of the creator economy sites and locals, they implemented an odd layer alongside that where it was an even more insulated community. So that it was really just your followers in your little room. And, I don't, it's not a feature that I really want. I'm not going to say there's no value to it, but I would, you can just like create, I mean, we have a whole actually separate chat app called Minds Chat where you can do like private groups and stuff like that. But yeah, locals sort of merged with Rumble. And it's all proprietary. I mean, look, I support my more diversity in the ecosystem, and so I'm glad that they're finding some success with Rumble. But I really do want to hold Rumble accountable because they're starting to get quite big, and it's very important that people make sure that they have some principles around surveillance. Around transparency, because we have no idea what's happening under the hood at Rumble. I mean, if you just all you have to do is go to Rumble and check your Brave browser, and you'll see all the tracking cookies that they're using. So, you know, I want them to be for real. I've spoken with Chris before, and he's a good guy. And there's a lot of good people like Dave, you know, as well. Like, people develop these apps, but they do it in secret. They don't share the code because they think that it gives them some sort of competitive edge, which I'm not even convinced about. But then, you know, they sell their companies and carry on. And yeah, they believe in free speech, but it's just not enough. It's not the future. It's sort of like an intermediary step.
Absolutely, I agree. Now I'd like to have personal insight into the day-to-day operation of Minds. I'm fascinated by computers and servers. I have my own server right here in the studio because I host my own website locally on a fiber optics. Nice. I really love it. What does the Minds infrastructure look like?
I actually have a surprise announcement that I can maybe
oh, nice.
Right now. So the Minds infrastructure has been actually on AWS for the last decade.
Oh.
And, you know, we all understand kind of, we've never had a problem. Honestly, it's very funny. They actually gave us like, and this was with no strings attached, they just gave us like 100K of like server credits like 8 years ago, because I don't think they even knew that we were like pro free speech. So I think that we kind of snuck by that one. So I can always dangle that in front of Jeff Bezos' face if they ever mess with us. Like, dude, you gave us 100K in credit. But we're leaving Amazon. We found, so because we are fully open source and we've focused deeply on DevOps and Terraform and Kubernetes for kind of infrastructure as code, we are dependent on zero like proprietary services on Amazon. So, and we have actually been running a multi-cloud architecture. It's wrong of me to say we've only been on AWS. We've actually been multi-cloud between AWS and Google Cloud. But here's what people need to understand about kind of corporate cloud. As long as you are multi-cloud and can cloud hop, it's just servers. So you don't want to be dependent on them. You don't want, as long as they can't censor you. So like Parler, like that was their, like, it should not have happened to them at all. And that was wrong. However, they put themselves in the position where that could even happen to them. They didn't, the fact that they could not migrate to another cloud immediately is because their infrastructure was not built properly. So, you know, for us, we're actually going to be moving to Oracle. And Oracle, I will say, you know, so Larry Ellison is the CEO of Oracle. They are much more pro-liberty. Larry Ellison, you know, endorsed Trump. They're even willing to put political speech language into our contract, and they have no hate speech policy. They have no acceptable use policy. So, and they're becoming much more competitive in the space. So we're really excited about it. It's way cheaper. It's way more pro freedom. If they ever like are, you know, we have a much better contract with them. And if they ever mess with us, we have a multi-cloud system anyway. So, you know, as much as someday, like if we ever just have infinite resources, I would love to like build a censorship resistant data center. I know that Torba is kind of doing something in his garage or where in his barn or wherever he has it, and good for him. But you know, there's also major risk with doing that because it doesn't necessarily make you more resilient. It, you know, cause then you're relying on your local providers and you're always, we're going to be relying on something. And this is why like our hybrid approach, I think, is where things are going, because Noster relies on no one. There is no, you know, there's thousands of relays running around the world. Anyone can run a relay. Actually, Umbral just announced Noster support. Have you heard of Umbral?
No.
Oh, it's UMBR. I'm not paid sponsor. UMBREL, and it's basically like a Bitcoin node. So their initial product was a Bitcoin node, but now you can back up your Nostr posts on your own Umbral node as well as run a Bitcoin node. And it's like this nice, you know, really cool little device you can run in your house. And so they're supporting Nostr, so you can have a local backup of all your Nostr posts. And yeah, so for us, like, but again, Nostr, a pure Nostr client is never going to have the functionality that Mines has or that more of a hybrid app can have. Mm-hmm. Because if you're, because Nostr in its pure sense, if it's a pure client with no server side stuff, the notifications are going to be really bad. There's all types of services that we love on social media that require central servers. So it's not this situation where you want to be like, you need to have a nuanced view of centralization and decentralization. Centralization is not evil. You know, and decentralization, we always want to bend towards it, I think. We want to lean towards decentralization and, you know, in certain use cases, be fully decentralized. But in other cases, it's just, you know, you may want to use a server for something like data processing or recommendations or notifications or like heavy processing video, for instance. Like Nostr is not handling video currently. So you need servers for video. So it again, hybrid approach. I think that as long as the network is giving you sort of the escape hatch, that's the key.
It's amazing to me what you're describing. The net has changed so much. We used to be Apache server, HTML, PHP. You exist in the cloud. And so Mines is probably very lean in terms of code base, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can go check it out. If you go to developers.mines.com, all of our code is there. You know, our mobile app also, I recommend people check out. If you haven't had it, we've worked really hard on it. It's all React Native and it's super smooth. Like React Native, see, and this is the irony about a lot of open source frameworks that are really popular that people build apps with. Whether you're talking about, you know, React, Angular, you know, like Google, for instance, sponsors Angular. And Angular is one of the most popular front-end frameworks. React, Facebook sponsors. So, I mean, React is very dominant. And so Facebook and Google actually do contribute a lot to open source. They build database frameworks. They build they even do have some open source AI models. They have so many tools that they build. And so they know why open source matters. But and this is what makes them so dark and malicious, is that they want to keep the developers under their control. So they know for the backend services and the framework, they have to be open source because developers will never touch it if it's not open source. And they need that brain power of the planet to contribute and use those frameworks so that they can control the market. But with their apps, like, you know, whether it's Facebook app, Instagram, you know, any of Google's apps, none of it is open source. So it's similar to what we were talking about before, sort of like knowing the truth and intentionally kind of staying away from the truth. It's the same thing. People, there are brilliant people at all these big tech companies, and there's probably wars going on within them to push this kind of stuff. There's probably open source advocates inside those companies that are saying, go this direction. It's going to be better. You know, the public is going to trust us more. But then from the top, they're saying, no. We need to maintain this control, and it's too much of a risk. So, you know, we are happy to embrace the open source projects that big tech puts out there because, you know, they do have massive communities, and they don't control those frameworks anymore. I mean, anyone can take them, and, you know, we've actually forked like a number of frameworks, and it's been great. So And I don't know how technical you want to get in terms of like all the different stuff.
I love the technical, because let me tell you, when you talk about the hybrid approach of centralization, decentralization, it touches me so deep, because I'm a counselor. At time, people ask me to write engineering projects for new projects, and they come to me and they're like, Jeff, can we get this fully decentralized on the blockchain? And I'm like, well, you know, there's a lot of things in there that you'll want still a server to respond, because the social world is a world of consensus, of absolute knowledge over everything, and to determine you want this, this is the best of this. And this, you cannot really do this on a consent basis among thousands of users. You need a central entity ultimately to make the decision, and you could put makeup on it and make it look decentralized, but you would have severe issues, severe bugs emerging when the crowds of the internet decide that they start exploiting your decentralized system. Whereas with a clap of the fingers, you can solve your problem with a central server that can repair the mess when it happens.
Yeah, you know, the whole we built multiple prototypes with like blockchain, you know, fully blockchain social media, and it literally makes very little sense, actually. So because it's slow, and you know, guess what, you don't want to pay a gas fee every time you post a comment. No one wants to do that. It makes no sense. Even with the layer two tools in Ethereum, like Polygon and Optimism and this kind of stuff, that makes it better, but there's still fees. It's still fees for every transaction. Yep. And then you have to have that token to pay for the transaction fee, and it's all good. I actually support projects that are working on that type of stuff. But the other issue with it is that everything is fully immutable. So you may not necessarily want everything to be permanent. Maybe you do want the option to have it permanent, which, you know, is good for censorship resistance. But, you know, you might also want the ability to take something down, in which case you need a server so that you can, because once you unleash content into the decentralized world, guess what? You're not getting it down. It's not, it's out there. So, you know, you are giving up a certain degree of control when you interact with these decentralized systems, but it's sort of with the higher intention of more control. So, you know, with Nostr, it's interesting because it is crypto. It's cryptographic. It's not cryptocurrency, and it's not a blockchain, but you still have a cryptographic key, which is really the basis of where the sovereign web is moving, because your key is signing events. Every time you do something, there's an event signature that is getting pushed to the relay, whether you're following somebody, whether you're posting a piece of content, whether you're commenting, whatever you're doing, you sort of have this you know, little network of signatures all around mm-hmm. your identity. And then that is what you carry with you. And so crypto really, you know, you could call Nostr like a Web3 infrastructure, even though the Bitcoin people would hate you. And then you've got like Dorsey. Actually, Jack Dorsey, ironically, gave $500K to some core Nostr dev. And he, you know, he didn't get anything for it. I think he's maybe paying for his sins with Twitter, which is why he did it. But I know the guys that got the Bitcoin from him, and you know, he totally did it with no strings attached.
Jack Dorsey is one of the most amazing guys. I feel a contradiction in the man, because he's talking sweet to me. He's been talking about things that would be amazing, but he lost control of Twitter, and he is largely responsible for letting Twitter become what it became.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people, I think, are letting him get away with too much, because he's now like Mr. Bitcoiner. And it's good that he's doing that. And I would love to have a good conversation with Jack, you know, with all respect. And, you know, I you know, because we constantly talk about the path of redemption for people who have been banned from Twitter. You know, I would also agree with the path to redemption for Jack, but it's going to take time. And he needs to really prove it. So, I mean, the Twitter files, we're doing this event on April 15th in Austin, Texas, Mindfest. And we are yeah, going to be having all of the speakers there talking about these decentralized systems. But also we have Twitter Files journalist, Leighton Woodhouse, who co-wrote the piece with Michael Schellenberger and had access to the Twitter Files. So Leighton's going to be speaking on a panel with Destiny, Jack Posobiec, Brian Callen, myself, and then who else do we have? We've got Ian Crossland and Luke Radowski from Timcast, and then interestingly also Eliza Blue will be on that panel. I know there has been some, we had her booked before this all happened, and obviously we're not going to, we would never deplatform. I would never, you know, I don't want to deplatform, but
no,
you know,
course.
That's been, it like won't get off the trending Twitter. It's like, okay, I've never even seen somebody trend on Twitter for this long. And it's sad to see the whole feud happening between Quartering and Tim. I think that's kind of unfortunate. I wish, you know, I don't like the drama, but we're going to, you know, we're going to ask questions and we're going to have a serious conversation about that stuff. And then we're going to be doing some like live kind of audience. We're going to bring audience up on stage and kind of debate with Destiny, and Peter Boghossian as well is coming. So it's going to be a blast, and we're going to do live music after. So
if you're willing to do it, when you take the microphone and you're just beside Destiny, says Destiny, JF says hi. That would be fun, but only if you want. Now, on Eliza Blur, that's an interesting point of distinction, because Twitter went, of course, with the interpretation, okay, our hip-hop videos, which are public artistic productions of hers, because she now claims that they are human exploitation, sexual exploitation, she can go back and basically deconsent to her filming of these dance videos. What was the position of Minds on this?
You know, we didn't have a position necessary. In terms of the non-consensual media, like, I think that there is, ultimately, it's about what the law states. And so I think she got the video taken down because of a copyright claim, actually. And so we would honor a, you know, if it was a true copyright claim. I mean, that video is literally nothing other than just her. So I think that she does probably have a copyright claim on it. You know, obviously you can't, the whole idea of deconsenting later is extremely complicated, specifically with sexual exploitation material. You know, I would just say we would deal with it on a totally case by case basis. And I don't think that there would be any sort of general rule of thumb. I am still kind of educating myself on all the nuances of the case with Twitter, but you know, it's, yeah, I do. Do you have like a more specific question about it?
No, I mean, I think you'll figure it out as it comes. Of course, you have to take the evidence as it comes. What I'll say on this case is, I as a man don't get to regret things I've done in the past and get them banned from social media. You can shame me with all the video I've ever left on the public space, and there's no way for me to go back and say, oh, well, I got exploited in that video. And I find here that a kind of dishonest way of recruiting the sexual exploitation argument is happening, where, hey, you filmed a prostitute video and you regretted it, but you filmed it consensually. And if you were a politician, it would be relevant for journalists to talk about it. And in a way, you are a politician. You are someone on a campaign about human trafficking. And it's relevant to ask, what degree of human trafficking were you the victim of if you were dancing with your boobs like this in a hip-hop video?
Yeah, I think that I'm still making my way through Shane Cashman's piece, hanging out with her for the last couple of days. And Shane is a very honest man from my experiences with him. So I think that he's going to ask the hard questions. You know, I think that when you put things out there that you regret, I absolutely agree that like there comes a point where it's not up to you, and you put it out there and you made a mistake and you have to face that mistake. When it comes to like sexual material, I don't think that should change the law necessarily, but I do think that, like for instance, if that happened to me, if I 10 years ago did a music video half naked, I'm sure you all love thinking about that. I would go and reach out to the person hosting it and probably just ask them and, try to work it out that way. I think that there, what this has exposed, particularly with Jeremy and Brittany, is that Twitter's moderation system is completely screwed up still. Because actually, even if Eliza did, I imagine she reported it on Twitter, but it's actually not Eliza's fault that they got banned. That is Twitter's system where they basically make you admit your sin and take this down before you can come back in.
This
I mean, and
compendation
here,
is ridiculous.
it is so ridiculous. It is, it's just over the, it's like Maoist. I don't even know what, like, it's like you must admit it. And even if you don't believe it, it's so dark. And I mean, that needs to change at Twitter. And the, because I understand the same thing happened to Jordan Peterson and the Babylon Bee. They could have come back in, but they didn't. And based on principle, and I think that that principle absolutely is there. But I do not believe necessarily, and I'll ask, but that Eliza wanted that to happen to them. I think that she just wanted to, kind of try to get the content down. And I'm so, I think that everyone can imagine a scenario with where if a sexual video of you was out there that you would probably try to go get it taken down. How, but I don't think that that necessarily means that, you ultimately deserve for it to get taken down.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fine equilibrium. We are headed toward the conclusion of the show. Perhaps one last line of questioning. I'd like to talk about the past and the future. Web 1.0, people start getting connected. Before that, there was the BBSs. I was hanging out on BBSs before 1995. Networks were building. Web 2.0 comes in, people start being at the center of a production of a of an internet presence, and it revolutionizes journalism. It changes the world, and a whole generation will grow without even knowing central journalism as a mainstream thing, as something that they adhere to. And then Web 3.0 with crypto revolutionizing the financial system. Minds has been surfing through various of many of these eras already. What is the future of the internet and what is the future for minds?
Yeah, I think that we've hit on some of the big points. Ultimately, sovereign keys are where things are going. And so I highly recommend that people start educating themselves. And, if, for instance, if you hold Bitcoin, where do you hold it? Do you hold it on a centralized exchange or do you hold it on your own hardware wallet, like a Ledger? That is a paradigm of difference between, your control and of your assets and your freedom. So that same dynamic applies to social media and where everything is going because, if you want to control your identity and your content, then you have to take control, which does come with certain risks. If you lose that key, guess what? You can't just reset your password on Google and get your stuff back. So, and this is why delegation really matters because what you can do is basically go and put your, true root key in cold storage and lock it in a safe somewhere. And then you kind of permission that key to, you enable that key to permission other sub keys. To so that even if you lose the sub key, you still have your root key. But like these are, this is the learning curve that people need to go through because freedom requires responsibility. you know, and a lot of people act like they want freedom, but then, you know, they can't even keep, you know, their briefcase organized, and they lose their key, and then they lose their whole identity and their content. So, you know, the transition to this new social media realm is not just like, you can't just expect other people to solve it for you. You have to like go through that learning curve and get organized in that sense. So it's just as much of like a personal evolution as it is with the tech itself.
Absolutely. I never felt as sovereign as when I was holding metal cards with my own encryption of my own Bitcoin. I knew that this was the physical manifestation of a degree of liberty that is unmet in human history. And so many people just want to know, where do I put my Bitcoin so that someone else is handling their safety? But there is nothing like this feeling. And I've been making some guides on how to do it properly, how to get your keys, how to get backups, how to encrypt your very keys so that no one ever finds them. Beautiful testimony here.
Yeah, ease
on
into
sovereignty.
It too. The other thing is, it doesn't have to be, you know, if you have, you know, say you have a whole Bitcoin, like you don't need to put it all on the ledger right away. Like, gain that experience that you were just talking about of like unprecedented feeling of freedom. Do it with like $20 worth of Bitcoin just to start, so you can say, okay, now on this, what do I have? I think I have, I have these.
Don't show us like, your keys.
Well, no, this is a.
Oh, wow.
This is called a tap signer. So this is similar to an open dime, which is it's basically the cash equivalent of Bitcoin. So you can activate, basically, I could give you this and I don't have the key. You activate the key. So on the open dimes, actually, it's this little kind of USB drive. Mm-hmm. And you have to puncture the hole to activate the key. So, you know, because that's one of the issues. You don't want to give somebody you don't want to accept a hardware wallet of somebody who has the private key, because then, you know, they might just take your money when, you know, before you get home.
Yeah.
So you need some sort of a bearer instrument for crypto. So again, it's amazing what's been happening. And like, I really do feel like we're close, and, you know, the economy is obviously very, very shaky right now, but I think that we've just learned that Bitcoin is not going anywhere. And even though if everything is down a lot, and it could go lower, it probably will go lower. There's probably going to be a huge, you know, another huge dip, but it's still not going anywhere because nothing is better. And it's just amazing that humanity has created this and, you know, these other systems. So, you know, I'm, as you can probably tell, I'm very optimistic. And I think big tech is going to be forced to acquiesce, and they're going to be forced to adopt all of this. Otherwise, they're going to become irrelevant.
I'm as enthusiastic as you. I have a weird crowd, and sometimes they have very specific questions. Micronova says, what is Bill Ottman's opinion on graphene?
Oh, have you been listening to Ian Crossland?
No.
I think this guy is this guy likes Ian Crossland. Ian, by the way, who's a co-host on Timcast, is a co-founder of Minds and is one of my old, very close friends. We were roommates for a long time. Graphene is amazing, as far as I can tell. It is a extremely, I mean, just like it has multitude of different uses, and I don't know enough about it, but I have some. Ian sent me, you know, a little sample,
no
and
way.
I have it. Like, it's somewhere over there.
Wow.
But I think that it has huge potential. But I'm not an expert, so. But yeah, I'm very pro seeing what people come up with.
Well, when I was young, I was collecting rocks and I did have some graphite. So I guess that I'm in the Yan Club on the graphite side. Pterosaur Raptor.
Well, graphene and graphite are different.
Oh, they're different? Okay.
Yeah.
Because on the Wikipedia page, they talk about graphite and graphene. Maybe there's a difference. Yeah, I think that graphene ultimately is a more perfect structure, perfect crystalline structure. Pterosaur Raptor says, I invest in companies I can research and I feel much better about it. When you invest in crypto, you basically cross your fingers. Well, I would say that at this point, there are cryptos that have a history of demonstration, Bitcoin, ETH, and then yes, the developing crypto, they do have a massive risk factor to them.
Yep, agreed.
All right, Bill Ottman, it was a pleasure and an honor, and I'm amazed by what we've discovered. The whole structure, the cloud that you work in, that is amazing. By the way, are you a programmer? Do you, on an everyday basis, do you work on the code base of Minds, or you have employees for this?
Yeah, I do work on the code base. I definitely do not call myself, I mean, I would call myself a developer, but I'm not a programmer. I'm not a computer scientist. So like, I've done a couple tiny tweaks in the code, but I'm on GitLab all day. I live on GitLab.
Nice.
Git is something that we haven't talked about enough, but Git is revolutionary in its own sense. We could talk about that another time. But GitLab is where I live.
Coders.
Yeah, if people want to interact with us on GitLab, I love it when people pop in there. It's just gitlab.com/minds. If there's anything that you want to see on the site, just open up an issue. And yeah, Git is where the magic happens. It's literally how, revolutions are created. I mean, Bitcoin, Ethereum, all of these systems are developed with Git, which is it's a version control system for software, and it allows you to, make a fork of a branch and change it and then request a merge back into the branch. It's just this very elegant thing, which Linus Torvalds also created, who also happened to create Linux. That guy is a ridiculous legend.
Wow. Respect to him, absolutely, because respect. In the end, most of the internet lies on these Linux computers still as of today. We don't have an infrastructure without this guy. All right, Bill, that was a pleasure, and we can talk again in the future anytime. Keep us up to date about how things go at Mine. Bye-bye.
Yeah, guys, hit me up online.
Okay, on Mines, and what is your Mines? Because I've seen it today. Ottman,
yeah, it's just Mines.
@OttmanMan. So I'll be putting the link in the description below. Bill Ottman, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.